Hello and welcome to the Majlis, ready for your pre-deliberative current affairs podcast focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, the host of the Majlis podcast and ready for your pre-deliberative media manager here in Washington, D.C. Voters in Tajikistan to go to polls on October 11 to elect their new president, and there are five candidates competing. Among them, incumbent President Rahmon, who is in power since 1993. Islamic Renaissance Party of Tajikistan banned and is in exile, and the only opposition party in the country, Social Democratic Party, boycotting the polls. The participants are largely government-supported parties, which experts say are there to present a facade that the election has a legitimate competition. But regardless, this is an important exercise given the fact that it might be the last time President Rahmon to seek the office, given his age and health, and also given the fact that his son is quickly gaining prominence in Tajikistan's political scene. In this episode of the Majlis podcast, we are here to discuss the elections, the campaigning, the candidates, their promises, and what's really at stake here as the President Rahmon headed to another term in the office. To discuss all these, I'm joined by Dr. John Hedershaw, International Relations Professor at the University of Exeter, with focus on Central Asia. Homira Bakhtiyor, an independent Tajik journalist and activist based in Europe. Tahir John Safarov, editor and senior journalist with Radio Free Europe Liberty's Tajik service, locally known as Radio Azadi. And Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. Thank you very much, colleagues, for joining us on this important conversation. So let me start with you, Tahir. Tell us, please, about the election scene. What has been happening so far, and how's the campaign like?
The presidential election is taking place like in tightly controlled environment. And if you remember the election of 2013, so take the script and look at it, and they even did not bother to change it a lot. And there is five candidates, one less than the previous election, and the situation is the same as in 2013, even the worst. You know that the election is taking place, and when the rights of political rights and freedoms are violated in the country, and there is no real election campaign in the country.
What do you mean by that, Tahir? What do you mean by that? I mean, there is nothing happening. I mean, there are no speeches, any rallies. What do you mean when you say there's no campaigning?
There is a campaign, and we have reported that candidates were taking the same bus or same flight to part of a different part of the country, and they are sitting together and talking about their programs. But there is no genuine and real political debate.
Tahir, you are saying candidates are going to the same direction on the same plane and taking part in the same gathering. And
yes.
I just cannot comprehend how awkward that would look like. I mean, apparently competitors are sharing the same stage and talking about their campaigns and not challenging each other. Then what are they talking about? Are their promises any different from each other?
They are not like very different programs, and most of them talks just in general about economic situation, so they do not talk a lot about political situation in the country, and the promise is the same, that we will improve people well-being, we will improve the economy, we will create new jobs, but you don't see any specific programs, any specific promises that every candidate give to the people. All of them, they talk, and the speeches are the same.
Wow. Homira, tell us what you are hearing. I know you are not in Tajikistan, but you have sources there. How do you see the type of campaigning is taking place, if there is any?
Here, I can agree with my colleague, Tahir John, because it doesn't mean where are you. It's just well enough to analyze what's going on and what talk candidates with people or what kind of programs they have. Unfortunately, these candidates are using the same program except one or two points in all the programs. It's the same, and unfortunately, even if candidates know that it is just a game before an election, because they know before that president will win this election as well. But even for this game, candidates are not really ready to talk about the reality of our country. So here I don't mean about political situation. For example, for just giving enough energy, they could talk about migration situation, how many Tajik are migrated, what kind of problem has our migrants in Russia. But unfortunately, even about that, they are not ready to talk about. But I know that it is just like a game before election, and these candidates from the party, which we are used to call like a pocket parties, because this is not real opposition parties. This is just parties who are financing by the government. So that's why it is all what's going on in Tajikistan. It is the old scenery.
Old scenario, right. Bruce, there are like 10,000 things to talk about, I mean, these days, given the type of economic challenges that the country is going through. I mean, just looking into the names of those parties that are registered, Agrarian Party, Social Party, Communist Party, Party of Economic Reforms, aren't these are the same parties that they also participate in the previous election?
Oh, yeah, of course. Well, I mean, and the fact that the Communist Party is still competing kind of says a lot about the level the country's at, if they're really, at least in that democratic reforms. I mean, the Communist Party would be, go way back years and years and years. You know, Humaira was right, and Tahir also, that all these parties were just created to give the illusion of a multi-party election. They don't have any real independent programs, you know, and as we've heard, they're real careful in what they say about what their platforms are, what promises they're going to make. I mean, they're not specific. It's part of the show, and if you look at the situation in Tajikistan today, you would think there's a huge amount of things they could talk about.
Yeah.
I mean, Humaira mentioned migrants, but I mean, what about the health situation in the country? How's that working out? You know, something about the economy more than we'll make more jobs. I mean, they've been hearing that for forever out there, you know, and not just in that country either. So, you know, it's a kind of a pathetic show. And besides the parties that we were talking about, I mean, these are kind of old guys, too. Practically every time there's a conference, someone's talking about the fact that most of the population, more than half the population, is under 30 and stuff. Well, the youngest guy competing in this election is 57. The leader of the Communist Party is 72. These people they're just simply not equipped to deal with the modern problems that confront Tajikistan now.
And there was one young guy who was not allowed to compete, right, with the lawyer? And what happened to that guy?
Well, I'd let Tahir talk about it. It's Faramu Zirgashev. Yes, he's 30 years old. He's from Harog. And he tried to nominate himself as an independent candidate, but the Tajik election rules don't provide for that. But Tahir would know more about him than I do.
Tahir, about that lawyer. I mean, in every election, some interesting things happen in Tajikistan. In the past, there was a female candidate. And of course, again, they barely have any chance of winning an election. But still, this lawyer was not allowed to run. It's a very interesting development. So, Tahir, tell us about the circumstances in which he tried to run, and then he was not allowed to run. What happened there?
As Bruce said, the Tajik law does not permit self-nominated independent candidates, which is not in line with international norms. And that guy, the young guy from Badakhshan, said that he collected more than 75,000 signatures. But when he announced about it, there was a lot of attack against on him on social media, and there were very bad stories about him, about his family. Even Tajik Center for Strategic Analysis also posted a story about him, saying that he is a little bit crazy. And so he was just under the attack, and even he said we talked to him, and he said that he is going to take authorities to the court and to try to change the law that people can nominate themselves. But so we'll see what will happen. But this guy just was under a lot of pressure, and he was called insane, and a lot of attack was against him. So authorities said that it's not possible to register it, but at the same time, they were just attacking him on social media and trolling him, and this was happened to that guy. And
Tahir, did you guys had a chance to talk to him?
Yes, recently we talked to him about his intention, but I will be sincere that I just could not have a time to listen to his interview, which we had 2 days ago.
Interesting. So, John, there are so many things that I cannot comprehend about this process. Probably this lawyer knew that he stands no chance of winning this election, but still attempted to register himself, which he was denied. And this is one thing. The other thing is President Rahman must have known that this lawyer has no chance given the entire system working for him, but he still denied him an opportunity. So please help us to understand this political atmosphere in the country, which for us seems to be easy to read because it's nothing more than a facade to give 7 more years to President Rahman. But apparently it is a serious exercise for the authorities. I mean, they look very cautious about this.
Well, for me, it just seems to be rather familiar to the past. We've had candidates who've tried to come in as insurgents in the past, people like Zaid Saidov before the 2013 elections, and Oynho Boba Nazarova. They probably presented greater threats because they could present themselves as national candidates and had a greater degree of support behind them. This character is obviously from a particular place and region. But if you look at the picture of the candidates who we have, it is, as previous speakers have said, a series of not really serious candidates, the same parties as the past. In one case, Abdullahim Gafurov, we have someone who's actually been a candidate in 3 elections. I think he gained a little over 2% in 2006, a little over 1% in 2013. So obviously, if that trajectory continues, but these are not, it's not really about a competitive election. That's not the purpose of an election here. It's to provide a veneer of an election, a veneer of democracy, I suppose, to so that we're not simply formally an entirely sultanistic or presidential system or monarchy.
Mm. Yeah,
but in terms of practice, in terms of political power, it makes no difference.
Yeah, I mean, you said that very rightly in terms of the purpose of the election from the authorities' point of view. But why not to allow this lawyer who apparently was a genuine candidate? Of course, the lawyer knows, the president knows that he stands no chance of winning, but still they wouldn't allow him.
Well, I mean, obviously, it's a very conservative political culture where any sense of competition or challenge or genuine opposition is really considered something which could be threatening, particularly when that opposition is associated with the Badakhshan region, which obviously has seen violence in the relatively recent past. The government is very sensitive and nervous about that region. So from the perspective of the highly authoritarian leaders of Tajikistan, it makes sense not even to allow the slightest opportunity for dissent or political competition, even if it's not really going to have any effect on the outcome.
Tahir, I mean, you said some sort of rallies, like gatherings are taking place. So what's the level of the participation there? I mean, are hundreds and thousands of people are showing up, or how does it work?
No, it's before that, I would like to add to what John said. In Tajikistan, as I said, the script of election is the same as like in 2013. And you said that why they did not allow that guy who certainly could not win the election to participate. Because before, the Tajik media said, even there was discussion, that according to the scenario, the people who they choose to nominate for presidential candidate as Rahman's competitors, they have to be old, according to the script. They have to be known just in a very narrow
segment of the society?
Segment of the society, or just among their institution, or in some universities, or they should not have any political experience, or even did not do anything involved in politics. And another criteria of these competitors should not have any real political intention. So that's why they don't want to allow anyone who could say something different, who could raise a real problems, like for example, migrations, unemployment, poverty, and all of this. But if I turn to your question, you can see in most of the state media, right, about the election, you don't see like the independent media scrutinizing the programs, the candidates' programs or the speeches and other things. But if you see in videos, in programs, in state TV, state news agencies, just a small gathering, there is a small hall where sit 100, maybe 200 people are sitting and just listening to four candidates who just talking 1 minute or 2 minutes. And there is, let's say, not so much interest to the election.
Humaira, what the state media is showing? Obviously, I can understand they will be showing Rahman a lot, but other than Rahman, in terms of election, what they are talking about, what they are saying, what they are presenting to their audience?
Our state media, they are active as well, like in 2013 and I don't know, in 2006, they have the same agitation or not. They are, of course, writing or agitating more about Rahman as president, as leader of nation. So he does some duties. And this is a very, like, a big mistake in which we couldn't still pay attention that government must not do it. Like, if Rahman right now does some work as a president or, I don't know, as a leader of as a nation, but state media using it and agitating for election agitation. So they are reusing it. So even with this kind of game election in Tajikistan, state media still didn't get enough transparency between Rahman as candidate and Rahman as president. So they mix it all time. But on the other hand, also state media writes enough, I could say, about another candidates as well, because state media also should have some balance to show to audience, maybe, or even maybe to some international community, that we are keeping some standards. So here you could read about all candidates in Tajikistan. But when you will analyze it, you will get that nothing to do with candidates, or it is nothing to do with Rahman, because they knew before what they should write. For example, about this young guy from Badakhshan, even state media didn't accept him candidate like one independent citizen of Tajikistan who has right to be nominated for candidacy. They published very negative materials about him.
Interesting. Bruce,
May I add?
Sure. Go ahead, quickly.
As Humaira said, so you see Rahman highly publicized and through the country. He attends the different ceremonies. He met people, local, political, also intelligentsia, and also he sometimes inaugurates some schools, sports, and other facilities. And sometimes they distribute the gifts from his names. And as you know, this is against the international norms, right. And because there should be clear separation between state and other like nominees from the parties.
Tohir, since you mentioned that, is anything like that is happening these days?
Yes, it's happening.
What's happening? Tell us more about that.
As I said, that he is going like to different part of the country, and he is opening some facilities, some schools, some small factories, and even we had a video which we have to make sure if it's real. So we had a video that we opened a small factory, and after that we get a video which shows that the whole thing that were inside that building were removed.
What do you mean?
So it was a sewing factory where a woman was greeting Rahman, and after when he left facility. So the guy sent us a video.
Got it.
The same facility was like empty.
So it was a fake opening of some sort.
Yes, it is.
If the video that you received is genuine. Okay. So,
I just wanted to mention too that they had this weird things that would happen when Rahman would make this visit a couple of times, but the first time when he's leaving, and of course he's got maximum security all around him, and a child was able to break through the security and present him with a note, you know, about the problems in her region. And it happened again. But last week, there finally was reports that somebody tried to do that, and they weren't part of the script. So they were grabbed right away. But it was this cheesy theater of, like, you know, here's a child with a note, and she gives it to the president, and now he's aware of the problems in the region. I mean, really, really bad stuff. You know, I mean, you could just see it was staged.
John, does it say anything to you? I mean, he feels kind of compelled to show something going on, and it's very close to the election. I mean, he knows that he's going to win this election, right? I mean, so why he feels a need for things like that? I mean, opening or kind of taking part in the kind of, maybe some of them are genuine, but some fabricated opening ceremony of some sort. Why he feels need of doing that at all?
I think it's worth thinking about this question in terms of legitimacy of the ruling elite, where if we think about a democratic context, you know, our choice is put to the people every few years, a genuine choice between alternatives. And we see the legitimacy comes about through a fair and independent process. So if you're an authoritarian leader, that's not how you gain your legitimacy. You have to gain legitimacy by demonstrating you are, in some sense, with the people, representing the nation, that there is no real other choice, that you are able substantively to provide some things, such as peace. And of course, peace and the absence of armed conflict has been a big feature of Tajik political discourse for the period since the Civil War, constant fear mongering about what the opposition might do. But I think also being like a sort of like a sultan or a king or a czar, appearing as a benevolent dictator who has actually got the interests of the country at heart. So it's a kind of political theatre. It's very symbolic, and it's about generating an idea of a benevolent ruler. I'm not really sure how far Tajiks who care to think about it and who actually have some time and space away from scratching out a living in migration, subsistence farming or shuttle trading, when they think about it, I'm not sure they would necessarily be convinced by it. Some maybe, but it's probably just as much for the inner political elite to demonstrate that, yes, he is still, as he has been for nearly three decades, in control, in complete control.
Very interesting. I guess at this stage, it's certain, as you say, John, that the President Rahman is going to be declared a president for another term. I guess it won't be out of place, therefore, if we talk about what comes next. So let's talk about that in the context of what is really at stake in this election. Before that, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis podcast. I'm joined by Dr. John Hedershaw, International Relations Professor at the University of Exeter, Homeira Bakhtiyor, an independent Tajik journalist and activist based in Europe, Tohir John Safarov, editor and senior journalist with Radio Free Arab Liberties Tajik Service, locally known as Radio Azadi, Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Arab Liberties Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis podcast and Radio Free Arab Liberties media manager here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing the upcoming presidential elections in Tajikistan. So, Tahir, I guess, wants to leave us. Tahir, I think we can survive from here. Thank you very much for joining us today. So, let me start with you, Bruce. Is there any chance in a million times that anyone except President Rahman can win this election?
No, not at all.
Is there any reason to believe? So, Homeira, you want to say something very quickly?
No, I just said how well he knows Tajikistan. No, it's sure no.
So is there any reason to believe that election will be free and fair?
Also, no. You know, I mean, we've already heard that this script is well established. I mean, it's a rerun, essentially. We've seen this before. You know, he's not going anywhere. You know, I mean, it's a strange. It happens to seems to happen to almost all the leaders in Central Asia, where they get to be so corrupt and they let their family in on it, and then they end up painting themselves into a corner where they have to stay in power, because if they left, if someone who wasn't part of their inner circle or their group ended up getting in, they would be put under investigation immediately. Mm-hmm. So I don't see where anyone could possibly challenge him. You know, and there's the added thing that Tajikistan plays that security card, and I mean they've been playing this game for 20 years now, so they know it really well. Even before that, during in the civil war. They would reach out to Russia and say, you know, if we fall and the opposition gets a hold of this territory, then the Afghan conflict will just spread right in here, and you'll have a problem in the Commonwealth of Independent States. And it's exactly the same thing they do. They just happen to be appealing to more people than just Russia. Now it's China, the European Union, the United States and stuff. So he's got this strange guarantee.
Bruce, thank you very much. I mean, this is a very heavy weight analysis, and we often talk about this. John, in terms of the reasoning of Bruce, why this international community keeps tolerating this man in power, do you have any other prognosis, any other analysis than what Bruce has just said?
You know, Tajikistan obviously isn't particularly important, actually, for the international community. And, you know, they wouldn't feel they can necessarily influence anything there with the limited resources that they deploy. And I say they, I mean, I suppose, you know, the kind of Western democracies, whether it's the US mission or the EU mission there or other countries that at least say they're interested in the expansion and spread of democracy globally. I think there's an interesting issue around competency. So I think when we had the terrorist attack where Western tourists were killed and the investigation was obviously bungled and politicized and they just sought to blame it on the Islamic Revival Party, and then it proved to be some group we think linked with Islamic State. Those kind of things, I think, would be more important if you're thinking as a Western security actor, you know, we can't trust this government to be effective and certainly not in any way impartial when it comes to investigating security incidents involving our citizens. But generally speaking, you know, Tajikistan just doesn't feature internationally, so it wouldn't be so important. And I think if you look at this election, as I understand, there is an OSCE presence watching the election, but not a formal observation mission. Perhaps Tahirjan or Khmira can say something more on that. But I don't think it's being formally observed. And I think the previous presidential elections were formally observed, and usually, you know, that occurs when we have some reason to believe there's some sort of competition. I mean, there wasn't competition really in 2013 either, and nor in 2006. But so, you know, it's nominally, at least, it's important that they don't really give the election the benefit of the doubt. You know, it's nothing more than a facade. And, you know, previous statements when we have had observation missions have concluded that finally. Mm-hmm. And I think we've seen that move since about 2005, when we still had hopes that parliamentary and presidential elections in Tajikistan could be somewhat competitive. Since then, it's been very clear that's not the case at all. And therefore, you know, the conclusions of observation missions have made that clear. I mean, I'm talking here the OSCE, obviously, the Russian missions, any other observers, some of them are very praiseworthy of what has occurred.
Yeah, just to follow up on that, John, though. So as we discussed, as you said, it's going to be a kind of fake election. The participation of a couple of other pocket parties, as Humaira mentioned, is a part of a facade. And Rahman knows, as we all discussed, that he is going to be declared as a winner. And probably Rahman knows that it's not going to be free and fair elections. And probably he knows that the outcome of the election is not going to be regarded as a kind of a legitimate process, at least by the international observers, if they are there. I mean, what you get from the Russia-dominated observers, what was that CSIS kind of mission? Of course, they say what they say. So why he has to do this? Why he has to spend that much money to organize this election?
Well, it's formality. You know, by the constitution, they have presidential elections. I think if they didn't have elections, then, you know, they would be in the category of a very small number of countries of the sort of North Korea type that don't. And therefore, you know, it would be a bit more difficult when people like a Tajik minister in government would visit a democracy. You know, it's a little bit more difficult for them to be entertained. So these formalities matter. They matter in relatively limited ways, but it doesn't cost them anything to have an election. They know it's not really going to be a risk. I mean, obviously, there is some financial cost, but it's relatively limited. And having, you know, there's a certain demonstration effect to the public, as I was saying earlier. You know, there really isn't an alternative. You know, if there was anything like an alternative, it ought to appear in an election, but it never does. And so you can reinforce that message to the public. It's us or nothing. We are the bastions of order. We will give you a quiet and peaceful life, you know. And the only competitive election you've really ever known in this country was the one preceding the Civil War, and we know how that went. Yeah. And therefore you don't want that, you know. So this is a message which is sort of culturally and institutionally wholly anti-democratic, but being communicated through what is supposed to be the democratic incidents par excellence, which is in a set of elections. It's quite extraordinary. But as long as we don't think, you know, politics is driven by how it looks on the tin, but actually you have to get inside and say, what are the messages, what are the practices occurring here, then it makes perfect sense for them to go through the low cost exercise of having an entirely non-competitive election.
You know, in addition to what John said, Bruce, and the reason why he is going through this process, I mean, we often have a similar question asked during our conversation whenever we talk about any other elections in Central Asia, like Turkmenistan, for instance, in which we know the outcome even before the election process begins. So other than what John has said in terms of the explanation, the reasoning why Tajikistan is going through this, maybe I'm looking into this from a very narrow perspective. And whenever we talk about post-Rahman kind of era, we end up talking about rise of his son to power. The fact that even in this election, we were thinking about when he started playing with the constitution in terms of the age limit of a person who can be a candidate for the presidential elections, we thought maybe he's preparing his son even for this election, but it didn't happen. So he is again a candidate. So is his son taking away anything from this election?
I mean, there was a lot of speculation and rumors that Imam Ali Rahman might step down and let his son Rustam Imam Ali take over. And as you noted, I mean, they changed the constitution so that they lowered the age for a candidate to be a candidate for president. You know, I mean, we heard last year, again, this is nothing that you'll find in print or anything, but apparently Russian President Vladimir Putin wasn't really enthusiastic about that idea. He didn't think that Rustam Imam Ali was old enough, experienced enough, any of that, to do that. And you know, I mean, people write a lot about China's growing influence in Tajikistan and the fact they have a very small military base way in the Far East by the Afghan border. But Russia has, you know, anywhere between 5,000 and 7,000 troops on the ground, and they use a base, and they've shown with operations in the Middle East and in Libya that they can ferry troops around and military equipment fairly quickly. So, you know, what Russia wants means a lot to the Tajik government. And I think there was, again, one of these stories that Putin told Rahman during a visit years ago, that if Russia didn't like the leadership in Tajikistan, they would just change it. So, you know, this is something you have to consider. And it was, you know, with the pandemic, it's just been a bad year, even if they were considering doing that. This is not a time for great change in leadership in a country like that, especially when you have to consider that the population won't greet this very enthusiastically also. And they won't want the 33-year-old to be the president of the country, even if it's understood that Rahman is running the country from behind the scenes. You know, it's just the image is not good at this particular moment. I think Rustam Imam Ali is still in the succession, but it's just not for, you know, reasons I said, Russia and also the coronavirus. This is just not the time to bring him forward. And it has been suggested, of course, that Rahman wins the election and then decides before his 7-year term is up that maybe he's going to ease him, just kind of take a step back and resign formally as president and let the number two person in the country, which constitutionally speaking is Rustam Imam Ali, you know, so he could possibly transfer power over to son without ever having to hold an election for that.
Well, so if he's elected, which we think will be, how old he will be by the time his term will expire? I mean, you said 7 years, right?
You mean
President
Rahman? Well, he's 67, so he'll be 74 by the time this term ends. Yeah, and if you look at him, you know, it's hard to say. He certainly doesn't look happy, but he also looks less healthy all the time. So I don't know. 7 years seems like a long time.
Yeah. Humaira, about the Rahman Jr., Rustam Imam Ali Rahman, you know, often he comes up in any discussion about the possible succession of power in Tajikistan. How is Rustam's reputation in the country?
I think many of them, at least the people who I know, with whom I'm in touch, like analysts, journalists, and activists, many of them have a negative opinion about Rustan because you know that Dushanbe is a very small city and people usually know each other. We know who wants where, in which club, in which restaurant, where we spend our time. So that's why in this case, I can say that Rustam has very negative reputation because probably many people knew him as like this rich young pupil who enjoys his free time in very expensive club with drugs and with women as well. So that's why people are talking around him very negative. But if look to him as the son of a president of mayor of the city or another organization in which he worked before, because he was working in every ministry in Tajikistan. So people knew that he is son of the president and he should work here for a short period because everyone was sure that he is going to be a president in this election. But Rustam was not ready because people, we saw that he was like a mayor of city or worked in U.S. Youth Ministry and also Anti-Corruption Ministry, but he was not initiative person. So he didn't talk with people, he didn't write something, he didn't give his opinion, he doesn't like a talk with the journalist as well. He did nothing in this huge 10 years period because it like last from 2008, Rahmon and his team started to nominate and to prepare Rustam as a candidate. So it is like it 10, 12 years. But in during all this time, we didn't have heard anything what like Rustam, like a young brain can say to our people. He was not initiative. And also, as we know, like even when he studied in Tajik National University, we have heard many times that he never attends the classes. So that's why he doesn't have any kind of reputation, I think.
Interesting. The way, John, the way Homira spoke about Rahmon Jr., Rustam Rahmon, it kind of gives me an impression that whether he likes to be a leader or the next leader of the country. I mean, do you see any ambitions like this in this guy?
Well, I mean, it's very hard to say, but I totally agree with what Humera said. I mean, all the rumors when I was living in Dushanbe many years ago, when he was still very young, was, you know, he was a completely irresponsible person, well known for driving his car at high speed down Rudaki and being very abusive to most people he met. And I think probably what really matters is not an election going wrong or leading to a change of power, but when you concentrate so much power in the hands of an individual, they have to be competent. And most authoritarian leaders are quite competent on the ground in terms of what it means to be an autocrat. And I think you can say Rahmon himself certainly was and possibly still is most of the time. But the son seems not to be. And I wonder, you know, the decision-making here, you have to think, well, who matters in terms of decision-making? Yeah, but as Bruce says, Putin matters. But within Tajikistan, you've got the family. And I doubt, frankly, that the president, the father, really thinks he's son is up to it. He may not. I wonder about the daughters, the much older daughters, people like Ozadar, who's been in government for a very long time. If he wanted hereditary succession, she'd probably do a better job. I mean, I'm guessing, but, you know, from what we've seen of her, you know, and she must know how irresponsible her younger brother is. So the conversation in the family and amongst key security services people who are the key decision makers here, you would think is going to be against Rustam. So I think it's less important what he wants and more important what the view is amongst the inner circle of the elite. And then beyond that too, you know, for the 200 or 300 families who are made rich by this regime, because it, you know, it's a kleptocracy, that's how we should think of it. You know, it's really about allowing a small elite to steal most of the country. Their wealth and their power is going to be at risk if you have an incompetent successor come in. So I mean, I think what that highlights for us is that hereditary succession is very, very rare. You know, we see it in Azerbaijan with Aliyev, or we saw it. But in the times in Central Asia where we've expected it to happen, it may happen in Uzbekistan with Gulnara Karimova or in Kazakhstan with Dariga Nazarbayeva. Both of them, I think, somewhat negatively affected by their gender in a very patriarchal society. But nevertheless, it's very, very difficult to bring about. I mean, I think it's just as likely that President Rahmon will get to the end of his time, quite possibly. Yeah, he could die in office like a Karimov or Sapo Ramatniyazov in Turkmenistan many years ago. And then you have a sort of congregation of the key security services, family people and oligarchs, and they get their heads together and find someone who's just a bit more competent and who's going to protect their power and wealth. Who they have confidence in to do that.
Thanks, John. I totally agree with what you said about Rustam Rahmon Jr. But I also think if President Rahmon doesn't have any plan for him, then how to read the fact that Rahmon keeps elevating Rustam's role in the Tajik politics? You know, look at his background from just a young kid driving his fancy car in Dushanbe. He reached to the point where he is the second in command in 33 years old, while his dad is the first in command. Anyhow, I think we are way over time and we need to be concluding the conversation very soon. But one last point about Rustam, though. Since many of you spoke about Russia's role in Tajikistan's domestic affairs, I recall a comment from one of our earlier conversation in which one of the speakers referred to a conversation between President Rahmon and President Putin of Russia, apparently about Rustam as the potential future leader. So what happens during that conversation is that Putin suggests to Rahmon that if you want to give a gift to your son, this shouldn't be the presidency, but buy him a nice car. Perhaps it was said sarcastically, but very telling about Russia's possible role in any future development in Tajikistan. So moving on, Bruce, so as we discussed, it's almost certain that President Rahmon will be declared a president, which also means that he will be in the office for 7 more years to come. Given the fact that it might be his last term in the office, do you expect anything different the way he runs the country, or it will be the continuation of the same thing?
I mean, I would say it's probably going to be just like it has been for the last 7 years, more or less. Well, certainly for the last five, since they ousted the last legitimate opposition party from the country. Well, all right, the Social Democrats are still working. But once they got rid of the Islamic Renaissance Party of Tajikistan, they kind of established the way they were going to keep the government running, you know, free from any criticism or anything. The only thing I think that could change the situation is going to depend on how Tajikistan comes out of this pandemic when it finally ends. You know, the economy has always been in bad shape. You know, this has not helped it. You know, poverty's going up, unemployment's going way up, remittances are going down. You know, their ability to try to offset some of the damage that's been done in the last half a year will probably be one key factor in trying to determine if this government's going to be able to keep itself stable. I see no reason to doubt that Rahmon would make it through this term if he stays alive and wants to stay in office.
So, Humaira, your last thoughts on how do you see the next 7 years of Tajikistan?
I think the only thing which will be changed, it is this fighting among this family. Because
you are expecting internal fighting?
Also,
you are referring to some sort of internal tension within the family?
Among this family, like between Rustam or Ozoda or even someone. So these 7 years, we can just... I think that in next 7 years, we can see this kind of some fighting between powers, because we know already that some ministry, they are voting for Ozoda, and some of them are standing up with Rustam. But in the end of this, we saw that Rustam was not ready, because China, Russia, and even we have heard that Uzbekistan was not agree with Rustam candidacy on this elections. He don't prefer to give to Ozoda. That's why I think that in near future we could just to have heard some fighting of powers among this family. Just this one can be big change for us, because As we know, Rahmon doesn't pay attention on economical situation, on migration situation.
John, last word from you. I mean, Homaira just threw a kind of bombshell comment in the end of our conversation about the possibility of internal fighting within this Rahmon family. Where your eyes will be going forward, considering that Rahmon is going to be declared president for the next 7 years in this election on October 11th. So where your eyes will be going forward to the determine where things are headed.
I think in terms of political leadership, Humaira is right. What matters is the relationships within the family and the slightly wider circle of the sort of ruling elite and security professionals and what they think. Yeah, we've seen that in the past, with Hassan Nasrallah-Dalazar in 2008, apparently falling out possibly with Rustam, possibly with some other of the children, maybe about who controlled which and which banks and national assets were under control. So I think we could maybe see something like that again. That's always a risk within this kind of environment. We've seen enough already to know that it can lead to competition within the family, it can lead to resentment, and it can lead to fear that, you know, the son or whoever nominated successor is just isn't good enough to rule the country and to keep everyone's money that they've stolen in the last 20 or so years from their privileged position safe. And that's really, you know, how a government like this would function. So
thank you, John. It's such an interesting debate, but we really need to end it right here. Let me do it with a final remarks from you, Bruce. As we discussed, considering that President Rahmon will stay in the office for 7 more years, but it is certain that the transition that we have been talking about for a long time, we don't know how, in what shape it will take place, but it's very likely to happen in his this term. But as Humaira and later John was saying, once President Rahmon or his circle has to take this decision, there are series of consideration that they have to keep in mind. Rustam might not be as obvious successor as many things, given the points that John has raised, but for some reason, Azoda might not work out either, and there's a serious possibility about the family fight. So I'm thinking when we talk about succession in Tajikistan, maybe we should not be limited only with the family members. There could be considerations beyond the family. So where your eyes will be going forward to see what is in the store for this country in the upcoming 7 years?
You know, as John said, it's possible to look into this. Now, surely there's a lot of people there that have their own ambitions. It would like to have the same kind of deal that the Rahmon family has right now. If we look at Uzbekistan, for instance, you know, Shavkat Mirziyoyev is the president now. Now, if when Islam Karimov was alive, he had shown that he really wanted to take over. When Karimov died or left office, he wouldn't have been prime minister in Uzbekistan for very long. I mean, they would have got rid of him right away. So that just is an example. You can't know these things. People have their own ambitions. Yeah. But they're certainly not going to show them.
Yeah, you're right. And John is just writing to me saying that I can't believe that we spoke about Tajik election for an hour. Yeah, it has been 1 hour. But yeah.
There was a lot to talk about, actually. Yeah. You know, if I could find one last comment to end, to end the show. This is the first presidential election they've had in Tajikistan that has not had anybody, that any candidate, even at least into the campaigning, that was a legitimate opposition figure. Yeah. You know, there was an opposition figure that pulled out before in the 2013 election, started to run campaign, but then pulled out. But this is the first time where we don't have anybody like that at all.
Right.
The only candidates, the only running are purely pro-presidential candidates, and they're the only ones that have been campaigning.
Right.
And it's the first time it's happened.
Right. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Also here, I want to add one point as well. This is the only president election, I think, that Rahmon fights with himself, because this time after referendum, his candidate like Rahmon president and Rahmon leader of the nation.
Wow. Very interesting. Okay. With this, unfortunately, we have to conclude the conversation right here. Thank you very much, Humaira Bakhtiyor, an independent Tajik journalist and activist, Dr. John Hedershaw, international relations professor at the University of Exeter, Tohir John Safarov, the editor and senior journalist with Radio Free Arab Liberties Tajik service, locally known as Radio Azadi, and Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Arab Liberties Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi. Thank you very much, colleagues, for your time and thoughts today. And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Arab Liberties media manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C. Until next week. Bye-bye.